Hello and welcome to the Misrolling Podcast. As usual, my name is Jacob Staton, and as usual, I'm joined by JJ Armstrong. JJ, how are you?
Very good, thank you. It's April Fool's Day. We're the only fools you'll be listening to this morning in this podcast. Jacob, how are you? Judging by the fact that there's crutches in your background, I assume not great.
The April Fool's is I'm fine. Don't play football for no reason in your 30s, guys. That's where we'll leave
He's
that.
Old. Officially I'm old.
Officially old and officially retired from football. So we're talking Crystal Palace at home. So there's a lot of pre-match fanfare. Oh, I'll start off by saying that everyone that liked, commented, listened to, watched our little montage that we put together last week ahead of Saturday's game. Thank you very much. The response has been incredible. I think it was 85,000 views last time I looked, JJ.
Something like that, yeah.
Like that, which is mind-bending, which is a step beyond boggling. It's an incredible response. Thank you very much. I worked really hard on it. I spent 40 seconds doing the voiceover, and JJ spent hours and hours and hours going through footage and putting the rest of the video together.
Yeah. It was really fun to make. I was pleased to see that it was such a good response to it, that it connected with people, resonated with people. And I think the whole purpose of doing that was to gear people up for the fight we've got incoming. And I think I saw a lot of that, not just through our video, but throughout the week. You know, since the news of the deduction has come through, I think I've seen a fan base that looks invigorated, that looks up for the fight, that has made plenty of videos. A lot of other accounts have made videos. Forest have made videos. You know, there's people getting really excited for it, thinking where they're going to be the 12th person to help them get over the line. A lot of fanfare. You know, I think the only thing we really require from this is they can beg the fans to bring the noise and, you know, collectively resonate with the club, but it has to be reciprocated. So it was a lot of fanfare pre-game. It just certainly needed to be reciprocated on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then, you know, we look at the starting 11, and I think we're on the opposite sides of the coin with the starting 11, JJ. I didn't really, it's not what I would try to think where I wouldn't have picked. I think there's two I would probably have not have done. And that's, so obviously the starting 11 was Sells in goal, back four of Williams, Felipe, Murillo, Aina, midfield two of Yates, Sangare, and then the front four of Origi, Gibbs, White, Hudson, Odoi behind Wood. I wouldn't have gone Felipe. I really like Andrea Mabamadeli, but I could also say I appreciate having Felipe's experience in there. He obviously speaks Portuguese because he's Brazilian, the same as Murillo. So there's that partnership to consider as well. And obviously, the manager, Nuno, is Portuguese, so it's a shared language with him. Origi, I think he's playing his best football for us. I don't think he's done much wrong. And I think I'll come on to this a bit later on when we discuss the actual performance, but he's not a right winger, and that's not his fault. But JJ, you really weren't happy with the starting 11.
Well, no, I just think it just sort of zapped all that fanfare and, you know, pre-match build-up. I feel like the starting 11 just almost zapped it, because there were questions and people were a bit like, And I think at this point, play our strongest 11, and I don't think that this is the strongest 11. And I think Felipe, unfortunately, this season looks done. I think physically, you know, his legs have gone. He doesn't look quite up to it, which is a real shame, because we all know how good he can be. Last season, everyone's bored of hearing us say it, but one of the best defenders I've ever seen play for Forest. But at this moment in time, you know, he's retiring at the end of the season for a reason. It's because he can't physically keep up with the game. So I wouldn't have chosen him. I think this whole season, he's not been brilliant. Again, real shame. Yates and Sangare, I just don't think works. I think from the outset, that was a question I had. Can't see them working well together. It's one or the other for me, with a partner of somebody else. So question marks over that. And then Origi just doesn't start for me. And he's playing some of his best football, as you've mentioned. He's been better than he was when he started. I think he's a useful asset probably to bring off the bench. But better isn't best, because we've got other players that are better than him, like Alanga, So I think we have, at this moment in time, we have to start our strongest players. And Origi has been better, but doesn't do much, really. I don't think he's really contributed too much. So I think for me, there were quite a few question marks from the offset before the game even kicked off. And I think when you're building up that much hype pre-game, if a large collective of the fan base is concerned or have a few questions just from the team news an hour before kickoff, you get a bit nervy amongst the fan base early. So I just think we have to start our strongest 11. Personally, I don't feel that's it. So that's where I came in with that. It's still fine, but I think we need to start games strong, not end them.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I think I picked Yates and Sangare in my preferred 11. I don't necessarily think it's Yates and I think we'll come on to this later on as well. I don't necessarily think it's Yates and Sangare not working together. I think it's more Sangare just not working full stop. And that's not to say he's not trying. He's not up to grips with the pace of the league yet. It's not been helped by injuries and AFCON. But I think we said on the last podcast, there's still a great player there. Some of the performances I saw him do for PSV. I can't see him starting a game for the rest of the season because we haven't got time for him to work it out yet, if that makes sense now.
100%. Can I just jump in and say there is a good player in them and people are throwing stats at us and blah, blah, blah. I'm not debating whether he's a good player or not because I know he is. I've seen him play really well. Even for Forest, I think it was maybe the Man United game, he played really well in that game.
Yeah.
I don't think, if you had to ask me who's going to be the regular starter, the better talent in the Premier League going forward, Yates or Sangare, it's Sangare every time for me. But at this moment in time, he is not at that level. Ryan Yates, possibly argued, isn't either, but he's more useful to us, I think, at the minute. There is a good player in Sangare. You can see it. He's just not at the pace. And you can compile stats that make him look good as possible. But it's the eye test for me that I just can't really see much benefit to him at the minute. I think he looks slow to react. I think he looks lumbered. Does look like he's got the ability to progress the ball when he fancies it, but it's on the odd occasion. He's going to be a very good player. He's going to be better than Yates. He probably already is better than Yates. Definitely is better than Yates. But at this moment in time, you know, he's not as useful or effective to me. And that's going to evoke the people that hate Ryan Yates to just come at us and say they've got eyes and they can't see the same. But listen, it's a game of opinions, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Sangare may suit a more possession-oriented style of play. The way we play, where we try and counter-attack, he doesn't move the ball forward, he doesn't get the ball forward, which, you know, you can't play in a counter-attacking team if your central midfielder is meant to be better on the ball, it isn't getting the ball forward, I don't think. But yeah, into the first half. Started off a bit flat. I don't think they were better than us necessarily. And they get an early goal, which we both sit on opposite sides of the fence on, JJ, because I personally just think it's a great goal. The ball through was fantastic. The touch from Eze, the knockback, and the finish from Mateta was excellent. This goes down as one of those ones where you kind of just go and try and forget about it and move on as quickly as possible. But you think there might be someone a bit more at fault, JJ?
Too easy, I think. It was both a good goal and too easy. Williams cleared the ball, gave possession straight away, back to them. You know, it shouldn't be easy to just float a few passes through and get in that position and score. And I think Felipe, in that clip, looks lazy. He loses his man completely and his man scores. So it was a good goal. I'm not debating that. I just do think it's too easy. And it certainly was the last thing we needed. You know, I felt gaslit into being told to bring the noise when I think we started sloppy and slow and conceded a goal that early. I think it just sort of killed any momentum that they were trying to build. So, yeah, it was a good goal, certainly, but too easy for me.
Yeah, for me personally, it's not necessarily the Felipe bit for me. I will agree that the Neco Williams clearance slash ball up the pitch was a bit sloppy. That ball up the pitch as well never works for a. I think Chris Wood is a great player, and I said this to you over the weekend, is I still can't figure out what kind of striker he is, but one thing I do know, he's a striker that scores goals. But he still doesn't really feel like a target man. So that ball just lumped up the pitch, I don't think he's going to get hold of it and keep it and wait for others to join him. So I just don't understand. We did it a couple of times to start off with in the first half, and it just doesn't work. And clearly it puts us, if you don't get it past any clearance, you theoretically meant, if you get it past the midfielders, you have a chance to reset before it comes back at you. And it didn't do that. And that's why it came back so quick. I just think that ball through, and I can't remember who it was who did the ball through. I'm looking at their team now. Sorry.
Don't matter.
Jefferson Lerma. It was a wonderful ball from Jefferson Lerma to Eze, who's wriggled free and knocks the ball back. And my kind of goal, that. Lovely.
Very good goal. Eze is brilliant, by the way. Yeah. Really, really good player. Certainly going places. I think the story of the first half for me was sloppy. And this is where, like, we talk about bring the noise and the fans helping them over the line, but they've got to give us something back in return, I think. It's unfair to be a one-sided imbalance there, because it's give them something to cheer for, give them something to get excited about. And that first half, for me, wasn't it. I think we had the wrong personnel, as I've said, through the starting 11. Wasn't really working. There's elements, though, that I thought were promising that we could build upon in the second half, where we could potentially get ourselves into good positions. It's just the execution, that final move, that final pass was beyond sloppy, and ball retention was beyond sloppy. So the first half was frustrating to me. And obviously at that time, Luton were winning away to Spurs. So it felt really, really bleak at halftime.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a spell in the first half. I by and large agree, but I think there was maybe a bit longer than 5 minute spell around the half an hour mark where we hemmed them in. They didn't have the ball for that whole time. We were putting balls in, recycling it really well. And that kind of put my mind at ease that I think, you know, whilst we didn't score there and we don't look like we're ever going to score a lot of goals, that we're still creating chances, still in the game. Couple of that with the Luton score, which started to look horrific, isn't it?
It felt like we were eating soup with a fork in that first half. We could pen them back. They could have as much of the ball as we want, but nothing were happening. We're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, and it doesn't help as well when they've got Joachim Andersen, who is a fantastic centre-back, and I can't imagine that he's going to be at Crystal Palace next season. I don't know. You look at the way he played, wonderful defender, good on the ball, really strong, really quick. And I think that, like, Victor Lindelof plays for Man United. I always think that with Ivan Toney as well. Like, as much as I don't like what he did to us and that kind of thing, I look at him playing for Brentford and I just think, why have Man United paid 90 million for Hoyland when Ivan Toney plays in the same league? It's that kind of thing. We come off at half time and we make the change of Sangare coming off for Elanga, which I think was justified. I don't think Sangare was quite as bad as people are making out, but he wasn't effective. And if you're going to bring one of those two players off, I don't think you can bring Ryan Yates off in such a big game. Very effective player. I didn't really, because Elanga went to attacking midfield, didn't he? He didn't go out on the wing. Origi stayed out on the wing, didn't he?
I think they sort of mixed between them.
I didn't get Elanga coming on but not going onto the wing. I don't see Elanga being on the ball, being good enough to be creating and that kind of thing. I think Morgan Gibbs-White moving to centre midfield is something that we talked about when I did the transfer podcast about Reina coming in and saying, is this a possible option of dropping Morgan Gibbs-White back to slot Gio Reina in, which did happen, JJ, a little bit later on in the second half. But yeah, I think we came out for the second half and we had a real go, which is what I really wanted. And especially when Reina came on and Elanga went wide, Reina sat in behind Chris Wood, who worked tirelessly all game. Chris Wood did. And Callum Hudson-Odoi, I said to you tonight, I think I've finally fallen in love with Callum Hudson-Odoi. He's finally fit. He's finally had a run of games and he looks the threat that he was always said to be.
And that's exactly why he needs to start. I think Callum Hudson-Odoi is a real talent. I think, I saw it a few weeks ago. I think it was around the time we played Bournemouth. He was scoring. I think he scored two games in a row, but his confidence was building. He was able to beat his man confidently. He was a threat. Obviously, we saw him score a few. He is a real talent. When he's confident, when he's fit, we've got a special player in our hands. How he's not starting ahead of Origi, how Alanga's not starting ahead of Origi, I just don't get it.
I wonder if... I don't think Nuno could look at it on paper and say that Origi deserved to start over Elanga. So I'm wondering if there's some kind of extenuating circumstance. I presume Elanga went and played for Sweden in the international break. So I wonder if he's, and I presume Origi didn't for Belgium, did he? So I wonder if there's a tiredness factor. I wonder if there's something in Origi's contract about starting a certain number of games, which will get as a fine as well.
If there is, it's daft.
Well, that's what they do now, isn't it? I remember, I think that Marko Grujic went to Cardiff from Liverpool a few seasons ago. And in fact, it's just happened. Armando Broja for Fulham. He had to start a certain amount of games. He went on loan in January and he hasn't. So Fulham have had to pay like an extra £4 million for the loan.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that's not the case because the impact of Origi starting versus paying a bit more money due to contract reasons feels absolutely silly to me, but won't be the first time Forest have done something silly in the transfer window, eh? Well, back to the point anyway, Hudson-Odoi I thought was really good. I'm glad you're on board. I've definitely been on board. It's been frustrating watching him not start. This was definitely a chance to see our best front four at the moment start. Sangare did need to come off. I think something needed to change. There was three changes I wanted to see at halftime. Possibly a bit brutal, a bit too much, but I wanted Origi off for Elanga. I wanted Sangare off for Reina. And I wanted Felipe off for Omobamadeli. So we did eventually get two of them. I did really enjoy the Gibbs-White in midfield and Reina in the 10. We looked much more threatening when that happened. But again, it was a case of we end the game stronger than we started it with a better 11 than what started it. And that seems to be a theme recently with Nuno, and I'm starting to lose a little bit of faith with him. I think he's making some poor decisions. Game management, starting 11, frustrating me quite a lot. So it's a shame, but it did work, which is the positive thing. Eventually realised, and it culminated in what was a fantastic goal, Jacob.
Yeah, a wonderful goal, a great ball in from Morgan Gibbs-White. I think either Aina or Callum Hudson-Odoi have recycled it down the left hand side, got it to Gibbs-White, who's
Reina.
Was it Reina recycled the ball?
Well, Reina passed it to Gibbs-White.
Yeah, he's then chipped it in, and the finish from Chris Wood was just astonishing, if I'm being honest. To actually like head it back over his own head and lob the keeper all within the 6-yard box was amazing. Thoroughly deserved goal for all his efforts as well. I don't even think if you're a Palace fan, you could blame Henderson for anything. He's just been outsmarted. Well, not even outsmarted. It's just a great header, isn't it? And still with plenty of time to try and press on and get a winner, which we didn't get the winner, but we did press on, didn't we, JJ?
Yeah, I mean, the goal was brilliant. The ball from Gibbs-White, the weight of it was perfect. I didn't really expect Chris Wood to do too much of it when it was happening, but unbelievable awareness, great technique to loop it over the keeper and sit in the goal comfortably. I think that's a very difficult chance. I think he did very well, and Henderson made it look even better with his theatrical dive. But Chris Wood has been vital this season. He's been so important to us. Obviously, let down by Tyrone is not the right phrase. It's been unfortunate that Tyrone has been so injured, as he has been vital to us in the past. But Chris Wood has stepped up, and it's not something I really expected to happen, because he had a spell here where I completely wrote him off because I thought he was basically useless. But he's proved me completely wrong. He's proved a lot of people wrong and shown how useful he can be. And I think it's, is it 7 goals in 8 games that he's played now?
Is it? Yes. Sorry. Yeah. I'm thinking of the Fulham player. Yeah. 7 and 8 now. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's in a great vein of form. He's very confident. And I was saying to you, we were trying to figure out what type of player, what type of striker he was, because he's like a poacher, but isn't a poacher. And some of the goals he scored within this time, like within these goals, there's been some absolute worldies. Like this header was incredible. The goal, or two of the goals against Newcastle, I think were brilliant. You know, he's got a poacher's finishing him where he's in the right place in the right time, but he's got an absolute worldie in him as well. So he's been brilliant, and we're very lucky that he stepped up to the plate and has been so vital to us. And I think, please just remain fit, because if you told me at the start of the season that Tyrone would be injured and we'd be relying on Chris Wood, and you're almost, someone said to you, would you drop Wood for a 1 year? And you'd go, no, I'd be amazed. I'd be absolutely gobsmacked. So yeah, he's been brilliant, but what a goal that was. What a goal. Yeah,
great. And I suppose with Chris Wood, it's an odd one, isn't it? Because I'm just looking at his record. Only in the league, since he went to the Premier League with Burnley in 2017. This is his 8th full season in the Premier League. If he scores one more goal, that's 10. This will be the 6th out of 8 seasons that he's got 10 or more goals in the Premier League. It's about a 1-in-3 ratio, which is for where we are in the league, is probably exactly what, you know, if he scores 15 goals a season in a 38-game season, what more do we want? The only 2 times he hasn't scored double figures is the 2 times he's gone to Newcastle in January and then to Forest in January. And he was never going to play at Newcastle, was he? He was just signed so that Burnley didn't have him.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I think, like, I don't know whether it's Nuno coming in that's given him that burst of confidence, but he just looks a different player. I wouldn't really put Chris Wood and Quick Feet in the same sentence together typically, but I think he's got that in his locker as well. So, great player. Really took me by surprise how wrong I have been. I think at the time I was right, but now, you know, it looks silly because he's completely U-turned a lot of people's opinion.
Yeah. And then to cap the rest of the game off, there was some really great saves from Matt Seltz, it was a great performance. He's been very, very solid since we signed him. This is probably his best game. But it kind of fizzled out to a 1-1. Again, we really struggle with putting anything together in added time. And, you know, when it comes to a close, we just don't close it out strongly, do we? Do you know what I mean? It's not that we were bad, but you'd like us to create a chance, a big chance type thing that we just can't seem to do. But the main thing is we're out of the relegation zone, JJ, because Super Brennan Johnson got 2 assists for Tottenham and got them the cheeky dub over Luton.
Yeah. Sells was great. He made some really important saves. He's been a huge upgrade. And I think had we had someone like him in at the start of the season instead of Turner and Blackadimos, I really don't think we'd have been in this position. I think the points deduction, we could have taken a hit. I think we lost quite a few points through goalkeeping errors. So I'm pleased that that seems to be put to bed for now, at least, that there's no glaring goalkeeper errors to discuss every week. Mm-hmm. And you almost felt stuck. So fair play to Sells. He had a good game against England as well.
He did, yeah.
He looks confident. I still am unsure whether he would be a number one next season, but at the moment, he's not really given me much reason to doubt that. So be interesting to see what happens there. I think one thing's for sure, Turner and Blackadimos do need to probably exit the club. Whether Sells becomes number two and we get a new person in, or we get a more appropriate backup to him, you know, it'll be interesting to see in the summer. But for now, he's really helping us. It was really important we got that recruitment right. Wasn't many people's first choices. A lot of people questioned it. But again, similar to Chris Wood, you know, he's sort of backed it up. He's U-turned people's opinion. And I think he's had some really good performances lately. And the great thing is we don't really need to discuss him costing us a game, which we did a lot of the time. In terms of us closing it out, I don't know whether the lack of confidence weighs heavy on us a bit. I think it's almost as if we're scared to mess it up, to go for it, scared to mess it up and lose a point. Feels like we're more than happy to protect the point rather than go for free at times. And given the points deduction, given our position in the table, you can see why we're not playing with full confidence. We're not playing with as much freedom as we'd like. Definitely think that game was there for the taking. I think there was 3 points in that game for us. Palace were okay, but not they're not world beaters, you know, as Joe Worrell said. It wasn't like beating Barcelona. So there's 3 points in that game for us, and there would have been a vital 3 points. But I think the main thing is that we came away from the game with something, and we came away from the game out of the relegation zone. That was the mission. It's a great result. Whether we could have got 3 points or not, it's a fantastic result, purely because of that reasoning. Going to put the table up. This is how it stood at 90 minutes. Since this graphic, Brentford did draw against Man United and absolutely battered them.
Yeah, they did.
Man United was shocking. But Sheffield United, 15 points, 20th. They were 3-1 up, drew 3-3 against our next opponents, which we'll talk about shortly. Burnley, they're on 18 points and 19th place. I think they played Chelsea and I think they drew 2-2.
They did, yeah.
Then, there was that bizarre penalty decision. Anyway.
The both yellow cards were, I don't think either of them were fouls, never mind yellow cards, which is...
Yeah.
I think Vincent Kompany did very well, although he got sent off, to remain as calm as he did.
Yeah. Questionable decisions in the Premier League. Who would have thunk? In 18th place now is Luton. They go back down to 18th. Following our points deduction on the same amount of points as us, which is 22 points, but they've got a worse goal difference, they're minus 19, which leaves Forest now in 17th place, 22 points as well. Our goal difference is now minus 16. So we've escaped the relegation zone for now. 16th place, worth saying, is Everton on 25 points, so 3 points ahead of us. A better goal difference of minus 11. However, there is obviously the potential of either a deduction or fine, and a lot of disruption off the pitch in terms of Dyche falling out with the squad, apparently. Brentford now on 27 following this graphic, so they're now 5 points ahead. But we exited the relegation zone at full time. That's the main thing for me, Jacob.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's to say we were in there for one game, that's a huge plus. But yeah, the Everton thing, we've just found out that we got 4 points for £33 million over. They are £235 million over. And they've been trying to claim that they weren't over by, I think there were claims at the start that they weren't over by anywhere near what we were over. So it's going to be very interesting because they're going to get a deduction. They are hands down going to get a deduction.
A lot of people said they're going to get a fine.
A fine? How? Yeah, I don't. I think that'll help us get more points off then, I think, because if they're getting a fine for being what, 200 million more than what we were, then.
Yeah, I mean, it still sucks that it's even a thing. You know, clubs trying to compete, you've got a Man City backline the other day that costs more than, let's say, a second string back four, or not as strong as they normally go, right? And it cost more than Forest invested the year they came up just for four players. So It's mental. I think the rules suck. It's a shame that relegation could be decided in a boardroom, as we say. But you would think there'd be a points deduction given a further breach. Obviously, we had mitigating factors of cooperation. We admitted it at the first hurdle. We got 6 points reduced to 4. I feel like they've not been too cooperative. You know, there's a further breach. There's further evidence that they've not learnt the lesson. So it'd be really interesting to see how far this goes. But what is evident to me is that it's all being made up as we go along. So there's not really much we can point to and say definitely a points deduction or possibly a fine. It's just whatever the commission at the time feels like it. And, you know, I think there's been like 3 separate panels that have all come to different conclusions, different numbers. So who knows? But it'll be very interesting to see how that affects them mentally, particularly with the rumours of a fallout with Daesh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand how they can breach once, get a fight, get the points, get some points back. That's cool. They've breached again. The concept that they're not going to be put, that means it's got to be a worse punishment than 6 points to me. I mean, initially, to me, they should be getting those 4 points added back on because they've breached again, right? And then they get... I don't understand how this for breaching again, even worse, the fine could be the punishment could be less than the first time, right?
That's all right? I can say, Jacob. I don't get it.
I think that's a huge issue, isn't it? Like, you know, we basically spend our whole lives looking, watching, reading football, and you know, nobody knows what the actual rules are. Nobody knows what's going on.
A lot of football fans can understand the basics of the game enough to understand things that happen. What we don't understand really is financials or boardroom decisions that affect positions. So we can learn football, we can watch football all we want, but when financial decisions are impacting the game as heavily as this and nobody really knows the rules, it really takes a lot of the fun out of it.
I think I said previously, I don't think that monetary issues should result in points coming off. I think the, you know, restrict squad size, restrict signings, restrict wage structures, all that kind of thing, stuff that you could, that makes it tough, but you could work within, you know, just taking 4 points off us, man.
Yeah. Well, the main thing is we're out of the relegation zone, and if we get points back, then I guess we're further out of the relegation zone, aren't we? So,
exactly.
Positive.
JJ, you put a team sheet up after the final whistle to say this would be your team for the rest of the season, and you think basically we'll win more than we lose and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on the screen now for those listening. It's my route to survival, convinced as we finish that game that this team will do well. Caveat it, when you hear the name Yates, just calm down. Let me speak afterwards. Don't worry. Don't start throwing your phone. Don't start kicking fuck out of your dog. Just calm down. So, what's up, Jacob?
He said kicking fuck out of your dog. I said Nuno Tavares.
He doesn't kick it. He does something different. So, in goal, Matt Sells, back four of Williams, Omobamadeli, Murillo, and Aina, with a midfield two of Yates. Wait! Calm down. We'll get to it. And Gibbs White in midfield. In front of them is Alanga, Reina, Hudson-Odoi. And then in front of them is Chris Wood, which was met. It got quite a lot of traction online, this team. I'm convinced that this team will do well, but we got a lot of attention, got a lot of replies, which was, you know, doesn't always happen. So it was quite surprising, but 35,000 people looked at it. 61 people replied. And within those 61 replies, there was a nice mix of absolutely, this is the team for me. There was a mix of, yeah, maybe one or two, probably Dominguez for Yates, but I can see what you're doing. And there was a nice mix of,
Yates, are you f***ing mad, you s***? So
let me just explain myself at this moment in time. I understand that Yates is a divisive figure. I get that. I understand that Dominguez is a very good player and Danilo is a very good player and Sangare is a good player to some of you. I'm not saying that Yates is the future, but I've just seen it work at this time of tweeting. I've seen Yates and Gibbs-White work in the midfield. I've seen Reina in the 10. I've seen that Elanga, Reina, Hudson-Odoi free behind Wood. It's worked. We were better for it. That's why I'm convinced that this works, this 11 works. Omar Bamadeli for Felipe makes sense because Felipe can't run anymore. Can't do much of much anymore. That's why it makes sense. Now, for those that are saying, get Yates out, put Dominguez in. If Yates is taken out and Dominguez is in and he improves that team, brilliant. I'm happy. Take Dominguez out, put Sangare in. If it's the same effect, brilliant. I'm happy. Take him out, put Danilo in. If it works, happy days. Well, I was just going by what I saw at the time. I forgot about Dominguez, won't lie to you, but I was just going by what I saw at the time that worked. But as ever, Ryan Yates divides the fan base. I've been there. You know, if you look back on our iTunes reviews, 2020, there's a review saying this is not one to listen to. They called us Yaters because we couldn't stand Ryan Yates. We hated him. But his U-turn, my opinion, I think he's important. And people try and take the mick and go, Yates is in it because he shows a lot of passion and all that, as if that's like a bad reason. I think that's a great reason in the circumstance we're in. I think we need somebody that can carry the club on his back and care, because a lot of them look like they don't care sometimes. So calm down. If you don't want Yates in your squad, that's fine. You put someone else in there. It's not real. It's not real. It's what I would like to see. For me, it's my route to survival. If you think different, perfect.
I think that team would work with maybe not Sangare because he doesn't get himself about enough, but I think that team would work with either Yates or Dominguez. I think a potential issue with Dominguez, with also having Mungo's White, is Dominguez likes to get himself about the pitch a lot, likes to press, and I think that would leave Mungo's White exposed. And if Morgan Gibbs-White isn't sharp enough to see that and sit in, which is a waste of Morgan Gibbs-White, it would then leave the back four exposed. I don't think anybody would argue with the back four and the front four. I think anything you can say about the front four is maybe Taiwo if he's fit, but I don't think it's worth rocking the boat if Taiwo comes back, because he's only going to come back for a game and a half, isn't he? And he's going to be out for 4 weeks again. I'd love to see Reina start and play more. I think he looked sharp in his cameo at the weekend. Morgan Gibbs-White in centre midfield is great because he gets on the ball more, which is exactly what we need. I think it means he tries less as well because he gets the ball more. I've accused him of times of, you know, when we're trying to counter-attack, he ruins a counter-attack by trying something spectacular. And when he doesn't need to do it, I think he kind of, if he's got the ball more because he's playing deeper, I think it kind of sates that thirst for
absolutely, it insatiates the thirst for absolutely twatting the ball over to Meadow Lane and then shouting at Calabotton-Odoi because he didn't get there and he was nowhere near it.
It's one of the things of like, if Callum Hudson-Odoi was there, you'd also be thinking, why aren't you helping out defending, which we were doing just before. If he'd have just looked up, we could have played it a fraction of a degree back and given the Hudson-Odoi a chance to. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's a good 11. It's certainly my back five. It's certainly my front four. I think the only contentious point is who you would play next to Morgan Gibbs-White. I would personally play Yates. I think he's the right person to partner Morgan Gibbs-White. If you were just asking me who do I want to play, be that pressing centre midfielder, I would probably say Dominguez, but when you look at who he's partnered with, I think it would probably be Yates. That'd be my choice. And also, he's the captain and all that good stuff around passion and effort and stuff. I think he leads by example, which is easier to do from centre midfield than it was for Joe Roth from centre back.
You know the SpongeBob meme where he's like that and it says it's like capital letters and it takes the mick out of it? A lot of people do that with Yates and says, but he's got a lot of passion, or but he's from Nottingham. Nothing wrong with that. That ain't a bad thing. That's a good thing. We need someone that cares. So, I mean, I'd love to see this 11. I'd love to see this 11 from the start. I don't think we're going to see it. Nuno has not shown me any evidence so far that he's willing to play that team from the start. By the way, I'm not saying this is the go-to for every game. It's situational. Naturally, if you set up like that against a team like Man City, that goal difference advantage we've got will quickly disappear. I'm saying that I just think, basically, for a game like Palace, start. That was a winnable game, and I think it's one of our most winnable games thus far, or remaining. Didn't take advantage of it. Like I say, great result because we came out of the relegation zone, but I do still think it was a bit of a chance wasted. Now, Jacob, bit of a curveball question. I've not put this in the agenda, but I want to see how you react. Nuno Espirito Santo, next season.
Yeah.
If he is not the manager anymore, would you be sad?
No. Whether up or down, I don't want him next season.
Interesting.
I've personally seen an upturn in performance by and large. I'd say 80% of the games I've seen an upturn in performance. We haven't seen an upturn in results. I think the points per game is very similar to Steve Cooper's.
You're not allowed to say his name anymore, by the way.
People get upset. That's so, the name of my dreams, mate. Never mind on this podcast. So I've personally seen an upturn in performance. There are games we've lost where I thought we were better than we would have been, where we had more of a chance. But it doesn't change the fact that it's a results-based business. I just think whatever division we're in next season, I just don't think Nuno's the right man. If we go down, we're going to need to see a very swift return to a team trying to play the Forest way, which is what we haven't seen for the last two seasons. But you get it in the Premier League. It's all about survival. It's not about, you know, right now, it's not about how we play, is it? And if we stay up, I just don't think over a 38-game season, we're probably going to have to sell before we can buy, and I just don't see him being that person. I say it's the same about every Forest player that pulls on the shirt. I hope that they are the next Stuart Pearce. I hope they're the next Nigel Clough. I hope they're the next best player that has ever played for Forest. And I hope Nuno Espirito Santo becomes Brian Clough version 3. I just don't see it happening, regardless of where we end up next season.
I'm in the same boat to the same destination with you, mate. Regardless of whether we go up, whether we go down, I do not want him as a manager. I really hope he keeps us up. I think whilst there has been an upturn in performance, there has been elements you can point to where you go, we are much better. And there was that period of time where we looked threatening, we looked attacking, we looked confident, we were scoring goals. And you can point to that and say, never really looked like that under Cooper. Under Cooper, you spent 90 minutes scared, defending for your lives. But it did work at times and got results. Nuno's way has worked at times and has got results. I think, you know, you can't compare the two really, but when you put it on paper, the percentage, largely the same. I think he's made some big mistakes in terms of his team selection, in terms of his tactics. I think those that were crying for Cooper's head and for Cooper to go, if this was Cooper making these same mistakes, they'd be absolutely fuming. But I think you dig yourself that much of a hole, you've got to pretend that it's better, right? It's not. It's the same things that you criticise Cooper for. But because you called for that person to go, you almost look like you can't say any different. So, yeah, I don't really want him in as manager. If Cooper wasn't the right answer at the time, then I don't think Nuno is either. I think the difference is Cooper at least ignited a bit of passion and spark in the community, in the crowd, and what it looked like is in the players. I don't know Nuno, obviously. He's not my pal, but at the moment, he doesn't instill a lot of confidence in me. He doesn't get me up for games. I think his attitude towards media is very reserved and cold, and I'm not saying every manager has to be the perfect PR-trained media robot that gives you sound bites that you can listen to all week, but yeah. Something, give me something. I just think his lack of personality is always going to be difficult. You know, we're in a position where it's always going to be difficult to replicate what we had under Steve Cooper. So the person following him is in a tough position. But couple that with going even further down the personality line and being quite uninspiring, then you can see why. So for me, I whether we stay up or go down, he's not the man for me. Maybe a full preseason with a settled normal transfer window, maybe he could be the person. He's done it before with other clubs or Wolves, maybe. But if you had to ask me right now, I wouldn't be upset if he went, and if we sort of went our separate ways at the end of the season, regardless of the division.
Yep. Yep. 100%. We're looking at Fulham, which is tomorrow night, isn't it, JJ? Who had a very weird draw with Sheffield United on Saturday, 15 minutes out of time, apparently. If you haven't seen their equalising goal in added time, please go and search it out. I think the guy's name is Ricardo Muniz. It was an overhead kick to die for.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful.
This is another game where I think the team you put up earlier gets something out of this game. I targeted these two home games in quick succession as we need to win at least one of them. I think the results on Saturday meant that Palace wasn't a must win, if that makes sense. It would have been nice, obviously. I think I'm optimistic again, JJ. Call me a fool. I think 2-1. But yeah, this one's a Prime game, isn't it? Or is it BT Sport this one? BT Sport.
Yeah, BT Sport. I've just got on screen for those listening the last five games, the form for both clubs. So Forest is two draws, Palace and Luton with three losses, Brighton, Liverpool, Villa. Fulham's is a draw against Sheffield United with a win against Spurs, loss against Wolves, and two wins against Brighton and Man United. So much more difficult game than Palace, certainly. But if we approach it in the right way, there's definitely something to get from this game, I think. I think Fulham are a weird club that are capable of beating shit teams 5-0, unfortunately. But also, you know, they've beat good teams like Spurs, Brighton, Man U in the last five. You know, they're a good team. The Muniz or Munoz or whatever you call him seems to be on absolute fire at the minute.
Yeah.
Like Jacob says, check that goal out. It was a peach. Really nice. But it shows, you know, they needed injury time to get something from Sheffield United game. Sheffield United have arguably been one of the worst teams I've ever seen. They were 3-1 down at one point, Sheffield United. So I think it's hard to predict this one, really, because it depends what Forest show up. Also depends what Fulham show up. I think it's at home. I think if we pick the right start 11, if we go for it, if we attack, get the crowd geared up, then I think we can certainly get something out of the game. But I think if we approach it the same way as Palace, almost dull the expectation pretty early on, then I'm not sure. I think this is a harder game, like I say. If there was any game I'd predict would win and any game I'd predict would get a point, I think this one would be the one that I'd say we'd get a point from. But what have we got, if not positivity and hope, Jacob? I'm going with 2-0 Forest. Believe it, but we've just got to hope we learn our lessons from the Palace game and show a bit of fight, show a bit of spunk, and win.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm glad to see that cup's brimming, mate. Full. Spill it over.
Yes.
Spill it over. Well, if you're listening for the first time, thank you very much for finding us. We really appreciate it. And if you come back again and 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 again, God knows we love you.